hearing of the Capital Investment Committee for February 15th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Chair Lee.
Lee present.
Vice Chair Murphy.
Murphy present.
Representative Erdahl.
Erdahl present.
Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Frankie.
Frankie present.
Representative Freiberg.
Freiberg present.
Representative Hansen. Excused. Representative Hewitt.
Hewitt present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Representative Lucero.
Happy to have survived Valentine's Day.
Representative Moran.
Present.
Representative Pearson.
Pearson present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Ryer.
Ryer present.
Representative West.
Present.
And Representative Zhang.
Here.
Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum.
A quorum is present. Chair Murphy, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Thursday, February 10th? You're muted, Chair Murphy.
Buddy, I muted me. Mr. Chair, I move approval of the minutes from February 10th as they were printed.
Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for Thursday, February 10th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for Thursday, February 10th is approved. Members, today's hearing for the Capital Budget Committee will be higher education, which makes up a substantial portion of the bonding bill. And as all of you may have, you know, remember when we visited these different facilities and campuses across the state, we saw many that were in despair. First up, we will hear from the two higher education system in the state of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee from the University of Minnesota, Vice President Kramer. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, and excuse me. Thank you, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, Ranking Member Erdahl. And if I may, a special shout out to Representative Don Raleigh, as he and I worked together about 20-some years ago. So thank you so much for having me this morning. My name is Matt Kramer. I'm Vice President of University Relations for the University of Minnesota. President Gable is unable to join us this morning, but as that I expressed her sincere gratitude for the support this committee has given the University of Minnesota in the past and the work that we can accomplish together in the future. I'd also like to recognize the Board of Regents members who are joining us today online, and to thank this committee for your visits to our Duluth and Twin Cities campuses last fall. We bring the university's request to you today in alignment with our Impact 2025 system-wide strategic plan. These projects reflect key areas of need at the university with a focus on what stakeholders, including you, have expressed our statewide priorities. This request is driven by the aging condition of our facilities, which continue to deteriorate and present unique challenges to furthering our statewide mission. It's the primary reason that we lead with HEPR, or asset preservation. Our $400 million HEPR request, if fully funded, would help us tackle over 240 projects in 145 buildings system-wide. Thank you, Representative Ryer, for carrying this bill this session. Mr. Chair, we have a 10-year deferred renewal need of $5.1 billion. Of our over 30 million square feet of space statewide, over one-third of it is rated in poor or critical condition. We have chosen not to put the growing cost of facility repair on the back of students through tuition increases, as we want those resources to go towards improving the student experience. And none of the federal infrastructure dollars passed by Congress can address our shortfall. State support is critical. University capital projects take place statewide, boosting local employers who do the work and local employees who do the job. And the product of this improved university experience is students who are better prepared to contribute to Minnesota's economy. Today, you'll hear about some of our requests with a focus on a few of them that you're unable to learn about during your stops earlier this fall. We hope that you'll agree that a capital investment in the University of Minnesota is one of the best ways to invest in Minnesota's future. Mr. Chair, I will be introducing each speaker, and so as each one of our speaker ends, I'll come back online to introduce the next. And I'd like to start with Elise Toussaint, a Twin Cities student in the chemistry department in support of the chemistry undergraduate teaching lab request. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed and identify yourself.
Hello, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Elise Toussaint, and I'm a senior undergraduate student here at the University of Minnesota, majoring in physiology with a chemistry minor. I plan to continue my education through an MD-PhD program where I hope to assist in bridging the gap between researchers and physicians. But today, I have the honor to share with you a little bit about my journey and why investing in a new chemistry lab space is a smart investment for our state. So stepping into Smith Hall, room 110, for the first time is an experience I will never forget. Coming from North Branch, Minnesota, I didn't have much experience with true chemistry labs, though I was relieved that a lot of the equipment looked familiar, I was a little underwhelmed by the laboratory space. Walking into what should have felt like a top research facility ended up feeling like I was going back in time to the 70s. Being in lab for the first time brought a lot of different stresses, but one I wasn't expecting was not being able to hear my TA. The open floor plan allowed us to see each other, which was kind of fun and exciting, but this made it hard for me to focus on my TA. Though the space was difficult to navigate, this lab was the first opportunity that I had to truly connect with my peers, and I can proudly say that those first group members I ever worked with are friends of mine to this day. Though it was through this first year experience with the inspiration of my favorite TA and passionate professors like Professor Blank and Dreesen that I decided to not only minor in chemistry, but to become a TA. And so I owe my enjoyment of chemistry lab to my favorite and first TA. And so I wanted to pass on that feeling to hopefully spark a new interest in others. But the current space doesn't always align with those types of goals. The biggest issue I had as a TA was the stressful physical learning environment. It was all about finding a balance between talking loud enough so my students in the back could hear me, but not so loud that the section next to me was distracted. The lack of open space also wasn't accommodating for group data analysis. Most of my students ended up having to go out into the hallway to do work on their analysis, which made it hard for them to ask me questions since I couldn't leave the lab. With a course so heavily dependent on teamwork, the layout of the workspace is also important. As many of you have seen on your tours, there are poles and sinks placed in the way, forcing groups to split up and disabling them from truly working together. But when I was asked to reflect on my experience as a TA, most of my reflection was filled with all the joys of teaching this course. What I hold on to most as a TA is that even though I'm teaching, I'm still learning. My experience has gone beyond solidifying basic chemical concepts. I've had the opportunity to expand and refine my leadership styles, my resourcefulness, and peer mentoring abilities. In addition, much like my own TA, I have been able to stay connected with all of my students and continue to play a part in their academic journey. Being a part of the chemistry community as a student and a TA has taught me how exceptional this department is. Despite the specific hindrance that we have in this current space despite the significant hindrance that the current space presents to the modern laboratory instruction, we are still able to cultivate these experiences to nourish possible future chemists. This outdated workspace has provided us students, TAs, and professors alike the only remaining barrier to the learning experience all UMN students deserve. When an department and academic community evolves, it's frustrating to see its growth limited by the tools it has at its disposal. So as my journey comes to an end, having almost spent 4 full years immersed in this chemistry culture, it has proven to me that given the adequate tools and space that supports this progressive community, its growth and service to the UMN institution will be limitless. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Toussaint. Mr. Chair, our next speaker is Wendy Reed, Dean of the Swenson College of Science and Engineering at the University of Minnesota Duluth. We'll talk about the design funding for the old chemistry building at UMD. Thank you.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Wendy Reed, and I'm Dean of Swenson College of Science and Engineering. So Chair Lee, Ranking Member Erdahl, committee members, thank you so much for this opportunity and for your time today. My name is Wendy Reed, and I'm the Dean of for the Duluth campus, Swenson College of Science and Engineering. We're the third largest undergraduate college within the University of Minnesota system. I've been with UMD for about 3.5 years, and during that time, I've seen the tremendous positive impact the state investment has had on our campus and on our students. On that note, I'd like to thank our wonderful and strong local advocate, Vice Chair Representative Murphy. Thank you for your continued support of UMD, including your leadership with this project and the previous bonding bills. We're very grateful for you. I'm here specifically to talk to you about UMD's Science Building Renewal Project. We are asking for $1.6 million to help fund the pre-design and design for this 70-year-old facility. The building is the oldest on the UMD campus, and it has great potential to be repurposed and modernized and serve students for decades to come. This project will provide students and faculty in material science programs and the computer science department a collaborative space for learning with active learning classrooms, with laboratories and research spaces. These classrooms will be designed with movable tables and chairs, technology and whiteboards, which allow for more successful, engaged, and collaborative student learning. In these STEM programs, students work with and learn from our faculty who are doing amazing research in areas like robotics, cybersecurity, virtual reality, drug discovery, and material science. We have researchers working to discover new ways to use robotics to assist people as they age and need increased care, how to build software that is inclusive and helps us build healthier lifestyles, and many other examples of groundbreaking work are underway. The renewal project will allow us to move our entire computer science department into this building. Student interest and demand for computer science continues to be strong. At UMD, 100% of our computer science graduates are employed or continuing their education after graduation, and 90% of these students remain in Minnesota. Our current capacity limitations result in us turning away qualified computer science students, and this project would allow us to increase capacity and better meet student and workforce demand. Currently, the building we would renovate is mostly offline. We have used existing HEPR funds to start working on hazardous material abatement, decommissioning old laboratories, and start upgrades to the outdated electrical systems. However, we need your support to move this project forward and turn an old, nearly empty building into an action-packed modern learning and research hub. So I want to thank you again for this opportunity. I'm very excited about this project, and I'm confident that it will be prove a very wise investment for the tremendous long-term impact at UMD and for the state of Minnesota. So thank you.
Mr. Kramer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next speaker is Brian Bohr, Dean of the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Sciences here in the Twin Cities campus, will walk us through the university's farms legislative request. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Lee, Chair Murphy, Ranking Member Erdahl, members of the committee, I'm Brian Bohr. I'm Dean of the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences at the University of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to provide an informational presentation on FARM, Future of Advanced Agricultural Research in Minnesota, as part of the University of Minnesota's capital request. Minnesota is a global leader in agriculture and food systems, and the University of Minnesota has been a partner since its founding. The University of Minnesota delivers research discoveries such as new crop varieties, including the Honeycrisp apple, and healthier, more productive livestock, as well as the future talent Minnesota's agriculture needs to enable our agri-food businesses and community partners to thrive and grow. Key platforms in delivering these results are the fields and facilities we operate that include 10 research and outreach centers across the state, as well as on our St. Paul campus. However, these living laboratories need significant modernization and investment if we are to continue to advance Minnesota's global competitiveness as a global leader in agriculture. The FARM project represents that opportunity to reinvest in a state-of-the-art integrated research facility that ties our animal agricultural and crop systems research together into a One Health construct that recognizes agriculture, food, the environment, and human health as a One Health system. This integrated design is a one-of-a-kind system of leapfrog innovations, such as remote sensing technologies, robotic and biological technologies, and modern agricultural production facilities that will enable solutions to some of the most challenging problems facing agriculture. In partnership with Riverland Community College in Austin, FARM represents a vertical education opportunity that includes K-12, two-year technical degrees, bachelor's, as well as graduate degrees, and community outreach. This fully complements FARM's research strategy and is equally critical for delivering the talent to drive our future agricultural systems and our rural communities' economic development in today's modern agricultural sector. A successful feasibility study of this vision has affirmed an investment opportunity with the Hormel Foundation that resulted in their pledging $60 million in support of the FARM pending pre-design, site selection, and additional partnerships to complete the projected $220 million project. The capital request by the University of Minnesota for $60 million from the state will increase the competitiveness of Minnesota's agricultural economy, and farm itself will contribute $18 million in direct economic impact and $33 million in total annual economic impact. This doesn't begin to include the 40-to-1 economic return attributed to agricultural research and development in Minnesota that this project will contribute to. Together, this public, private, and university partnership has the potential to reinvigorate the living laboratory facilities the University of Minnesota needs to successfully serve Minnesota's farmers, businesses, and communities. Thank you for the opportunity to present this exciting opportunity. I look forward to further discussions as the session moves forward. Thank you.
Mr. Kramer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our final speaker this morning is Dr. Tim Schacker, Vice Dean for Research at the University Medical School. We'll walk the committee through the Twin Cities Health Discovery Hub and the Academic Health Center in Duluth. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee and members. For the record, I am Tim Schacker, and I serve as the Vice Dean for Research for the University of Minnesota Medical School. I'm here to discuss two important capital projects for the University of Minnesota. Both projects focus on advancing health, health discovery, and improving healthcare across the entire state. The first project is the Health Discovery Hub, $140 million request previously known as the Clinical Research Facility. I want to express our thanks to Representative Freiberg, who has introduced legislation to support this request for the University of Minnesota. Thank you. The theme of the Health Discovery Hub is to keep people in their homes longer, healthier, and happier. Our vision is to create a central resource for the entire university to conduct cutting-edge clinical trials that we can then bring out to communities around the state, no matter where you live. It would create a living laboratory to create new technologies that will help people live at home as long as possible, and to design and test new and innovative approaches to the treatment of complex diseases associated with aging. Patients will not have to travel to us. We will take our studies to them. I'll give you an example. I have a patient in Hibbing who travels to the university to see me in the clinic, and he very much wanted to participate in one of my clinical trials, but the commitment and travel time made that impossible. A central vision for the hub is that we will bring the trial to him by partnering with healthcare providers in Hibbing that want to be a part of the clinical research mission of the University of Minnesota. Additionally, the hub will improve healthcare and treatment in ways we haven't done before by bringing our physician scientists together in one space to collaborate, innovate, and improve patient care. And here's why that matters. Today, if I have Parkinson's disease, an increasingly common movement disorder, and want to participate in a clinical trial for people where current therapies are not working, this is what I have to do. I will initially be seen in our clinic in St. Louis Park. Then I travel to the West Bank Psychiatry Clinic for evaluation. Then I go to the neurology clinic on the East Bank to complete screening. When I have been cleared to be on the study, I go to the hospital and have implants put into my brain. Then I return to the neurology clinic for follow-up. If all is in order, I will go to the Phillips Wangenstein building for the neuroengineers to begin programming the device that will provide deep brain stimulation to reduce involuntary movements. All of this for someone with a complex movement disorder. By having the entire study team in one place, it will be easier for the patient to participate in clinical trials by eliminating the multiple stops and visits. And importantly, because the investigators are now working side by side, they will have better ideas together that will speed the process of discovery and to inspire new ideas and create new possibilities for our patients. Not only does this improve patient care, but it will help drive more federal funding toward our work, further enhancing our ability to deliver even more for Minnesotans around the state. Mr. Chair, I noted earlier the theme of the hub is to keep people in their homes longer, healthier, and happier. Through this new hub, we will be able to design new technologies that will do just that. Never again will your zip code determine whether you have access to the leading edge of new treatments. The hub would allow us to bring the clinical work, the innovation, and the discovery right to your home, no matter where you live in Minnesota. I'd like to transition now to the final request on the university's list, which is an additional health sciences priority, an academic health center in the city of Duluth. This initiative builds on the strengths of our current medical school and College of Pharmacy locations in Duluth, in collaboration with Essentia Health in St. Luke's. For this initiative, we are asking the state to support $12 million to start the design phase for this project. Building off investments already made by the state and the Duluth Medical District, this collaboration will immerse students in interprofessional education and provide a stronger connection to the health systems in greater Minnesota. The focus of the medical and pharmacy regional campuses is to train students who will go on to serve in rural communities and small towns throughout the state. This will create new opportunities for clinical faculty of both programs to provide access to healthcare for historically underserved patients in Greater Minnesota. This collaboration will prepare a healthcare workforce that better addresses the needs of Duluth, Greater Minnesota, and local Indigenous populations. Not only is this partnership important to the area's economic future, it will help meet the increasing need for high quality health services and provide greater strength for clinical trial connections in the region, further expanding and enhancing the reach of the Health Discovery Hub I spoke of earlier. Both the Hub and the Duluth Medical District are part of our commitment to the state. We educate and we train the next generation, we conduct research, and we provide patient care. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for this opportunity to present the University of Minnesota's capital investment request, and we look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Members, do we have any questions for the University of Minnesota and their budget requests? Seeing none, thank you so very much, Vice President Kramer, for joining us today. Really appreciate the presentation from all of your colleagues who are on here today, too. Next up, we have the Chancellor from Minnesota State, Chancellor Malhotra. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chancellor Malhotra, I think you're muted, sir.
My apologies. That's the most often used sentence of last 2 years. You are muted. Good morning. Good morning, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, Ranking Member Urdahl, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Devinder Malhotra, and I have the privilege to serve as Chancellor of Minnesota State. I think many of you are familiar with my colleague joining me today, as he joined you at many of your campus stops on your bonding tours this fall, Brian Yolitz, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. Along with our committed campus colleagues, Mr. Yolitz oversees 28.5 million square feet across Minnesota. Brian is a prime example of many Minnesota State employees who not only do great work in their area, but also have been stretched during this pandemic. Brian has been a key member of the team that led Minnesota State's efforts during this pandemic. Our campuses have benefited from their leadership. Mr. Chair, I want to take this opportunity to thank our amazing colleagues, particularly the frontline workers who continue to go above and beyond in providing a safe, warm, and dry environment for our students and our campus communities. Their work during the pandemic has been phenomenal. Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, and Ranking Member Urdahl, I would like to thank you for including Minnesota State on your bonding tours this fall. In total, Minnesota State hosted 45 of these visits. We are appreciative of the time you gave visiting our campuses, learning more about the projects, and meeting the students impacted by your work. I would also like to thank Committee Administrator Jenny Nash. We know how much work goes into executing these bonding tours. Brian and his colleagues are grateful for their partnership with Ms. Nash. The work this committee does truly makes a difference in the lives of our students. And the communities we serve. We believe these bonding tours give you a glimpse of the experience of our students, the synergy that our campuses have with their communities, and the partnership that we have with employers who rely on the talent that Minnesota State produces. Minnesota State is asking for $292 million, $150 million for asset preservation, commonly referred to as HEPR, and $42.9 million for the capital projects. You had the opportunity to see the needs for these projects during your visits. The top priority for our 2022 bonding request is the $150 million in asset preservation that would fund more than 100 campus projects across the state and address the most basic needs of our colleges and universities for updated roofs, windows, exterior walls, and mechanical and utility systems. Capital requests that come before the legislature are part of an ongoing deliberate planning process that brings forward only the highest priority needs to you for your consideration. The process starts with the Board of Trustees' guidance on the recurring campus academic and capital planning, as well as specific guidance for individual program requests. At the college and university levels, campus leaders use this guidance in developing their individual comprehensive facilities plans that document facility conditions and asset preservation needs, as well as major capital projects to modernize our campuses and best serve their missions. In preparation for the state of Minnesota's capital bonding cycle, proposed capital projects are rigorously vetted, peer-reviewed, and scored before being considered as part of my recommendation to the Board of Trustees for review and their ultimate approval. Chair Lee, members of the committee, that concludes my remarks. And with your indulgence, Chair Lee, I would like to turn the presentation over to my colleague, Brian Yolitz.
Mr. Yolitz, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee and Representative Erdahl and committee. I am Brian Yolitz, and I serve the Colleges and Universities of Minnesota State as Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. It's good to be with you again. I kind of feel like we need to have Steve Dixon, your bus driver, with us to make this an official get-together as a group. I'd like to first begin with a word of thanks. You and your colleagues provided Minnesota State with more than $90 million in capital investments for our colleges and universities in the 2020 bonding bill. These funds are now in use, making a difference, with nearly 40 HEPR projects underway, many of which are already complete, making our campuses warmer, safer, and drier. The 2020 funds also included four campus projects. Construction is well on its way at Anoka Ramsey, the Nursing and Business Center, which is nearly two-thirds complete, as well as the Normandale Classroom Renovation Project, where you wrapped up your campus visits over 2 years ago in preparation for the 2020 legislative session. That one's nearly 90%, 98% complete. Both of these projects will be ready for students this fall, ready to welcome them on their academic adventures. In addition, designs for projects at Minneapolis College and Pine Technical and Community College are well underway and will be ready for construction funding this session. As Chancellor Malhotra noted, turning to our request for this session, Minnesota State's 2022 capital program request is $292.9 million. You and your colleagues have explored much of this request this past fall. As a recap, more than half of the request, $100 or $150 million funds, our number one priority are asset preservation through HEPR, funding projects across the state of Minnesota. The balance of the request, $142.9 million, funds specific design and or construction work at 20 individual projects depicted on the green stars on this map of Minnesota. 10 or about half of these fund either the construction of design work funded in prior sessions or fully funds design and construction for campus projects. The other half funds project designs now in preparation for construction funding requests in the future. All have completed their pre-design work and are ready to move forward. Given our one-third debt responsibility for individual college university projects, the requests seek state funding for $245.3 million, with $47.6 million of the 20 requested major capital projects being funded by Minnesota State College and Universities as user financing. We are incredibly grateful for the announcement last month where Governor Walz included $260.9 million of Minnesota State's capital request in his 2022 capital bonding recommendation. We look forward to continuing to advance that along the process this spring. Here is our request for the 2022 session in tabular form. It's listed in priority order, and it's available in your handouts and also in your on page 10 of the bonding book, which many of you have either a link to or had from our visits this past fall. As we mentioned, this committee was very busy this past fall, visiting 15 specific college university projects on those campuses and hearing from two other projects at stops along your routes across the state of Minnesota this past fall. The green checks indicate those projects you heard firsthand of. And you also made stops at Bemidji State University and college campuses in Fergus Falls, Grand Rapids, Hibbing, Virginia, and Eden Prairie to learn about past capital investment work and current asset preservation needs, as well as hearing from local community leaders on their capital investment needs to support their local communities. We appreciate the time and attention given at each stop. As you heard at each of your stops, and as you continue to hear during many presentations, our number one priority is for asset preservation through HEPR, which is $150 million. This funds asset preservation projects like roof replacements and mechanical and utility system upgrades at every Minnesota State College or University, saving energy, making campuses safer, and reducing operating expenses. HEPR funding for asset preservation of our existing academic facilities, it continues to be an urgent need. And the urgent need for asset preservation, I think, will be one that you have heard a common theme from other state entities. As a bit of background, in the five bonding years between 2012 and 2020, Minnesota State requested $610 million for HEPR. In all of the bonding bills passed during that same time period, Minnesota State received $178.8 million in HEPR funding, or less than 30% of the prioritized requested to address the urgent preservation needs of our colleges and universities, leaving a majority of the preservation needs unmet. As a result, we have seen the backlog of maintenance in our academic buildings grow. Since 2012, this estimated backlog has grown by 63%, or $405 million, to $1.2 billion. Looking to the future, we see an estimated $1.3 billion in building systems and components exceeding their useful lives over the next 10 years. Together, we have a roughly $2.5 billion 10-year annual or 10-year renewal need to address those building systems and backlog and take care of those components as they age out over the years ahead. Our individual project priorities start at the Weld Hall renovation at the Minnesota State University Moorhead campus. This project, along with the following three, the Inver Hills Community College Technology and Business Center renovation, Minneapolis College Management Education Center renovation, and the Pine Technical and Community College Technical Trades Lab project, all have prior year state funding totaling over $3 million for design work and are ready for construction this legislative session. Priority six, design for the St. Paul College Academic Excellence renovation through priority 14, the Metropolitan State University Cybersecurity Lab renovation, were all in our requests in 2020 and 2021, but ultimately not funded. In this group, after relatively modest but important projects at Vermilion Community College, the East Grand Forks campus of Northland Community and Technical College, and the Brainerd campus of Central Lakes College, is a request for design and initial renovation work to set the stage for replacing Armstrong Hall at Minnesota State University in Mankato. Armstrong Hall is the main academic facility on the MSU campus and has exceeded its useful life and needs to be replaced to create a smaller, more effective, and a flexible classroom building to serve the university and its students through the 21st century. Also in this group is design of the Center for Interdisciplinary Collaboration, Engagement, and Learning at Winona State University, which aims to be the a net zero facility when completed, as well as design for the integrated manufacturing workforce labs at Lake Superior College to help the college move trades programs from on campus from currently leased space in downtown Duluth, as well as the design for the North Hennepin Community College Center for Innovation and the Arts. And again, at priority 14 is the design and renovation to support cybersecurity lab at Metropolitan State University. The final group is in our priority request, specifically priorities 15 through 21, are all new requests for funding this session. This group begins with design for renovation of the transportation trades and student services spaces at Alexandria Technical and Community College, and runs through the campus renovations in Hutchinson for healthcare and construction programs and student service spaces for those attending Ridgewater College. Pre-designs are complete on each of these and are ready to move forward. The requests at Alexandria, Southwest Minnesota State University, Rochester Community and Technical College, and Minnesota West Community and Technical College are for design this session and will see construction funding in the future. Finally, the projects at Riverland and Ridgewater Colleges fully fund design and renovation of campus facilities this session. Chair Lee and committee, we thank you for your time today and for the many hours you've spent visiting our campuses in preparation for another bonding session. We are incredibly grateful for your past support and support that is now being put to it, support that is being put to use now, making our campuses better places to learn and grow. Over the past 6 months, you've seen firsthand of our capital requests and as well as asset preservation needs, and we appreciate the attention you provided at each stop. On behalf of our Board of Trustees, Chancellor Malhotra, and the 340,000 students we serve, thank you for your attention today and consideration and support in the weeks ahead. We can answer any questions you may have at this time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Yolitz. Members, do we have any questions for Minnesota State? Seeing none, thank you so very much, Chancellor Malhotra and Mr. Yolitz, for coming by today. And also, we do have a question from Representative Erdahl. Go ahead, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Sorry, a little slow on the buttons today. I'm just warming up. First of all, I'd like to thank Chancellor Malhotra and the whole system for hosting us, for the hospitality that they showed us on the many trips that we made this past summer and fall. I've been on a lot of those trips over the years. I've been to Weld Hall so many times, I'm starting to feel like I should be sending in some tuition money here. But I noticed also that Ridgewater wasn't checked. I did make a special trip to Ridgewater myself and look over that very needed project. One of the thoughts I have, concerns that I have, and I'll direct this to the Chancellor. If we didn't, let's just say that this year we decided, we're just not going to do any Minnesota State funding. How would you take care of the needs that you have, Chancellor, if we didn't fund it?
Chancellor Malhotra.
Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl, first of all, thank you. Thank you for your continuing engagement and support with us through the years. Much, much appreciated. And thank you for visiting our Ridgewater College Hutchinson campus also to check out their needs. As Associate Vice Chancellor Brian Yolitz has pointed out, our top priority is HEPR, $150 million in HEPR. And that represents only about 10% of the current deferred maintenance we have and our current needs. And if that is not funded, that will balloon to about $2.5 billion over the next 10 years. And what this entails is that increasingly we will have to take these physical facilities off, which will not provide us space to offer full complement of our academic programming, and thus seriously jeopardizing the pipeline which provides Minnesota the talent it needs and its economic and social vibrancy. And I think in that regard, from a workforce development perspective, from a student success perspective, and most importantly, now we are the largest education provider in the state. We are also the most diverse education provider in the state. We have more students from low-income families, from BIPOC communities, from Native communities, than all other higher education providers put together. And so if we are not adequately resourced and funded, and we are not, and our institutions, our colleges and universities are not adequately positioned to serve these students in a manner they need and deserve, then what happens is that we also jeopardize the American dream and the upward economic and social mobility for many, many individuals from low-income families, from BIPOC communities, and from our Native communities, as well as we jeopardize the workforce development pipeline for the state of Minnesota.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chancellor. I'm just wondering if there are certain needs that have to be met. I mean, how would you actually do it? Would you seek other sources of funding if the state didn't provide any? Would you raise tuition? What would happen?
So, Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl, our business model is very simple. 50% of our funds come from state allocation and 50% come from tuition. And in the last biennial legislative session our tuition was capped at 3.5%. So there are limits to which we can raise resources outside the state allocation. And so what happens is that if indeed, as I said, capital bonding request is not met, or if state allocations, which we are asking for in our supplemental budget request, we don't get that, then we have to make very tough decisions with regard to the complement of academic programming we can offer, the number of facilities which would be available to us to offer those programming. It would also help. It will also put our colleges and universities in very, very tough decisions with regard to balancing the budget. And there you have to recognize that system-wide, close to three-fourths of our spending is on personnel dollars.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you, Chair Lee. Just concluding, Chancellor, don't worry. I don't think that suggestion is going to be made by anyone here, certainly not by me. But I just wanted to provide you with the opportunity to give some perspective of the importance of this funding and what would happen if it was not provided. So thank you.
Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl, your support is greatly appreciated, and I am very relieved that you would aggressively pursue and consider our request. Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Ryan.
I would just like to address a couple of comments about the value of HEPR in general. I am, of course, carrying the U of M HEPR bill, as was noted, but also support HEPR investment for the Minnesota State System. Going around the state from campus to campus and seeing the condition with our own eyes as a first-term representative was extremely valuable. I'm an alum of the U of M Twin Cities campus, and so I spent many years in some of the older pre-restoration buildings and can testify personally to the challenge that it poses when you're not provided good equipment and surroundings. So I would just beg, request, entreat my colleagues to consider sizable investments in HEPR this year when we have the resources and we can make a dent in the conditions that, as Ms. Toussaint so eloquently said, limit the ability to successfully achieve your education. And I want to thank everyone from both university and college systems for all the good work you do. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. Seeing no questions, again, thank you, Chancellor Malhotra and Mr. Yolitz, for coming by and echoing the thanks from Representative Erdahl for your hospitality when we were going on our bonding tours and hosting all of us from the committee. So thank you too very much. Next up, we have the Department of Human Services to present the governor's bonding recommendation. Please identify yourself, Deputy Commissioner Johnson, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Deputy Commissioner Chuck Johnson for the Minnesota Department of Human Services. Appreciate the opportunity to be here, Mr. Chair and members, to present the Department of Human Services priorities for 2022 bonding. I believe I'm going to get a screen share here of a presentation. Thanks. You can go to the next slide. These are our priorities. We have 9 priorities. I'll walk through each of them. 7 of these are our own buildings in direct care and treatment, and 2 of them are for community-related needs related to early childhood, as well as emergency shelter for people experiencing homelessness. Move to our next slide. We have about 2.5 million square feet of space within our direct care and treatment operations, and over 160 million in deferred maintenance on the 2.5 million square feet. And so you'll see as we go through this, while only one of our projects is actually called asset preservation, the others within direct care and treatment all address remodeling, upgrading, or improving existing facilities. So this would address a lot of our deferred maintenance. Our first priority is the Sunrise and Tomlinson building on the St. Peter Lower Campus. This is really a high priority and really has reached the point of a must-do for us in this legislative session. We have asked for this proposal before. This would allow us to create 30 beds of space as well as remodeling program space for the community preparation services on the lower campus in St. Peter, renovate and construct, furnish, equip existing buildings to make it usable for the operations. This is part of our Minnesota Sex Offender Program. What's critical here from a legal and program perspective is community preparation services, the program this would support, is a program, part of the program into which people are court ordered. And when the court orders them into this program, the courts expect us to move them into the program. Right now, we don't have capacity. We have about 30 people on a waiting list for this program. As a result, we're experiencing legal challenges as well as contempt sightings against the commissioner for not moving people into this program. So expanding the space, adding the 30 beds in the program space is critically important to us to ensure that we're meeting the treatment needs and meeting our legal obligations in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. Our next priority is in the early childhood area. This would provide $5 million in general fund and $5 million in general obligation, as well as $375,000 in general fund for administration. This is an early childhood program that we have had appropriations for going back over the course of 30 years at various times. It's essentially a grant program that allows local school districts or cities or towns, and with the general fund would allow nonprofits to be part of this as well, to renovate space and make it appropriate for early childhood programs. There's a desperate need within communities for space for early childhood programming. All-day kindergarten took some of the space that had been used in many places for early childhood. We did a survey of school superintendents and principals in 2016 and in 2020 and identified hundreds of millions of needs, dollars in needs identified by those individuals for early childhood space. This is an important part of the governor's initiatives around children and early childhood and is a high priority for us this year as well. The next slide shows you, as I said, this has been a grant program that's existed and been funded at various times over the last 30 years. And you can see where the programs have been funded in the past, most of them actually in greater Minnesota and not as much in the metro area. Our next priority is on our Anoka campus, Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center for the Miller Building upgrade. can see an aerial view here of the Anoka campus. And the buildings that are sort of shaped in a pentagon there are the main Anoka Hospital. The Miller Building down here in the corner houses administrative space, but also houses a substance use disorder program that also serves people with co-occurring mental illness. This program right now is in the south wing of the Miller Building. What this proposal would allow us to do is to renovate the north wing of the building to make it appropriate treatment space and to move the treatment program into the north wing. Right now we have challenges with inappropriate space, including double bunking of patients, which given the civilly committed individuals that we treat in this program, many of whom have behavioral challenges, creates challenges both for good treatment, but also for our staff and our staff safety. This proposal would allow us to move the program to the north wing. By vacating the south wing, we can also complete some HVAC work that was bonded and funded in 2018. We have not been able to complete because we needed to have the space vacated in order to complete the work. So this would include renovation of the space, gutting it out, getting rid of the asbestos and so forth, as well as completing the HVAC work. Our fourth priority is for waste, for water and sewer upgrades in St. Peter. We have sewer and water systems that go back to the early 50s on the St. Peter campus. We recently had it reviewed by an engineer who said that we have some serious deficiencies that should be addressed. This addresses both the water as well as sanitary and storm sewers. This would allow us to essentially replace those systems and as a request, GO request for $10.4 million. The next priority is for energy system upgrades. And these are related to our three largest campuses, Anoka, Moose Lake, and St. Peter, and would allow us to move toward a net zero carbon footprint goal. Those campuses, between them, account for almost 2 million square feet of space. This would allow us to essentially move off of some of the less efficient energy electrical systems that we have now and into more energy efficient and renewable sources. It also saves us, well, it will save us eventually, funding costs on our electrical costs, excuse me, which right now go to about $2.6 million a year across these three campuses.
Commissioner Johnson?
Are you still there?
Yep, we got you.
Oh, sorry, I had a disconnect there. This proposal is for emergency shelter grants, and this is $72 million in general fund cash. This is a need that we've identified, particularly as we work through the pandemic, of expansion, renovation, remodeling to make safe and sanitary livable conditions for people who are experiencing homelessness, excuse me. This would allow political subdivisions, tribal nations, counties, private nonprofit entities to acquire land, pre-design, renovate, refurnish, whatever is needed to create more capacity for shelter facilities, as well as, excuse me, to renovate existing facilities that are not adequate. We've seen the number of unsheltered homeless increase by 145% between 2014 and 2020. And it's not just an urban issue. It's actually doubled in greater Minnesota, the number of unsheltered homeless people. And so this is a critically important need that we've identified. We did have some ARP money that we used last year, put out on grant last year with a little bit of money the legislature gave us, totaling $17 million. We recently got the proposals in on those grants, which does very similar to what we're proposing here, and had $68 million of requests. So clearly the need is out there for more ability to upgrade and expand shelter capacity. And we'd like to get this proposal funded as well. Next slide. This slide addresses asset preservation within our direct care and treatment. As I mentioned a couple of times, our $2.5 million square feet of 2.5 million square feet of foot of space. You'll see here it's what you would see as regular asset preservation type of work. We have various roofs that we need to repair and replace. In addition to the three large campuses that I mentioned at Anoka, Moose Lake, and St. Peter, we also have campuses at Brainerd and Cambridge, as well as 56 group homes that we own around the state. And this will go toward work across all those systems. Our eighth priority is the demolition of Johnson Hall. Johnson Hall is an older building that's on the St. Peter campus. It's been closed for 2 years. We're not using it anymore. It's actually not very usable space for any sort of programming that we do. It right now has a negative value and $5.6 million in deferred maintenance. Our proposal is to demolish that building and create a more safe environment on our campus. And this is a $475,000 request for the demolition. And then finally, we have a proposal for security systems. We run secure treatment programs, and those programs require security, including fencing and in particular cameras, locked doors, and so forth. We've done some upgrades around this recently. We have a need, however, to replace the perimeter fencing in our Moose Lake facility, which houses a sex offender program, as well as sort of the fencing monitoring system that goes with that. We also have hundreds of cameras that are old and past life across our system. We need to replace those cameras and upgrade them to modern cameras. And we'd like to get, we have multiple systems of cameras. We'd like to have a single system so we can use our security across with a consistency across how we operate our facilities instead of having multiple different camera systems that we're using across the system. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Those are our priorities for DHS, and I'm going to answer any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Lee. And just a quick question for Deputy Commissioner Johnson. I appreciate your references to child care. That is an important issue, especially in greater Minnesota. And the grants, you say, are given to entities. These public, private, what types of entities?
Commissioner Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I disconnected again briefly, and I missed Representative Erdahl's question.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. I'll shorten it up. I appreciate your references to child care facilities and the needs there. And you mentioned that grants are given to entities. Are these public, private? What are the entities, the types of entities?
Commissioner Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, traditionally these have been, because they've been general obligation bonds, have gone to public entities, usually school districts. We're proposing here and have in the past, I think at least once, had general fund dollars as well, which could potentially be used then for private nonprofit entities. Think about a Head Start program as an example of a place that could benefit from general fund dollars.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner, and thank you, Chair Lee. That's basically all I was after. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Commissioner Johnson, you mentioned the total need across the state was in the hundreds of millions. Do you have a specific number for that?
Mr. Chair, I can get that number for you.
Okay, thank you. Members, any additional questions? And then Commissioner Johnson, if you could follow up too with regards to the request that came in for the, I think, totaling $68 million for on-shelter, homeless on shelters. If you could share that with the committee too, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, I can. It's actually, we're in the process right now reviewing those grants, so I can give you some basic information. I probably can't share too much until we've actually awarded grants.
Sounds good. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, Commissioner Johnson, for joining us today. Really appreciate that. Next up on the agenda is the Department of Military Affairs for the Governor's Bonding Recommendation. Major General Mankey, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hey, good morning, Chair Lee and Capital Investment Committee. I'm humbled and honored to serve as Minnesota's National Guard's Adjutant General. And thank you for your time this morning to give us the opportunity to share with you the Department of Military Affairs 2022 capital bonding request. I've got Mr. Kerr with me this morning, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs, who will walk you through the specifics of our bonding request. I thank you for your strong support of our capital bonding projects throughout the state of Minnesota. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Kerr to walk you through the specifics.
Thank you, Major General. Director Kerr, please identify yourself and proceed.
There we go. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, and I'm here to roll down our bonding request for this year. If I can figure out which mouse to use and which keyboard, I'll be making a lot of headway here. So here we are. So basically, there are two facets to our bonding request for 2022. The first aspect of that is to make up for a shortfall that we've run into regarding previously approved requests. We had significant and unanticipated increases in labor and material costs as our projects have been coming in addition to a little bit of underfunding from our previous requests. But the first aspect of our request is for $5.975 million for Rosemont, Moorhead, Marshall, and Fergus Falls Readiness Centers to be able to move forward with those projects. Because we match federal dollars whenever we try to do a project, we have some fairly stringent requirements from the federal government that we have to meet with regard to availability of funding. And so as those requests or as the contracts have come in high, we haven't been able to execute those. And we're going to have to delay some of those projects. And we're really seeking additional funding to be able to fully fund based on what we know about the current environment in the construction industry. And then our second request is for the completion of the Rosemont Readiness Center batch for $20.6 million is currently estimated, which is a total of $26.575. And I'll go into a little more detail as we move into the next slides. Again, if I can win the fight with my computer. So the existing projects that are out there, our original request for the Rosemont design was actually $1.1 million. We were granted $1 million, and we made up the extra $100,000 from our maintenance appropriation to allow the design to move forward. Unfortunately, the way the design contracts work, if the cost of the overall project goes up, we have to pay the designer more money. And so now, based on our revised estimate of what Rosemont's going to cost us, it's about $700,000 more than we originally thought. So we really are looking for $360,000 from the state and then a matching amount from the federal side. On the Moorhead project, that came in a little bit over budget, not as much as some of the others in percentage basis, but we're looking for an extra $855,000 from the state to make up the shortfall there. The Marshall project, we actually are almost, well, we're more than doubling the request on the state side to get us there, and then a smaller amount for the Fergus Falls project. And I think I have details on the following slides for each of these. So Rosemont design, again, as the Rosemont project comes together, we're a little bit flummoxed here because our original plan was to conduct the design and then use the results of the design process to help temper our request. Unfortunately, because of the lateness the last bonding bill passed, we still don't even have the designer on board. So we have not been able to use that. So we're moving forward with our estimating process that's directed by the federal government. But we're really interested in getting this design complete so that we can move forward with the Rosemont project, which also is, of course, our second big request. The Moorhead Readiness Center, this slide gives some details of what our shortcomings are there. I'll try to catch up with myself in my script here. Originally, $5.345 million were appropriated with a dollar-for-dollar federal match. The overall project cost was just under $11 million. It's now coming in at $12.4 million, so we're asking for an additional $855,000 to match what we're going to receive in federal funding for that project as well. The Moorhead Readiness Center is home to the 2nd Battalion, 136th Infantry Regiment, and it's a tactical headquarters for 850 soldiers. About 300 soldiers drill at the Moorhead Readiness Center. And this would be the first renovation that we've done in Moorhead. And it would address $1 million in deferred maintenance and make the building safer, smarter, and better with better controls. The Marshall Readiness Center, there we go. Also a very important project for us. $3.25 million were appropriated with a dollar-for-dollar match. We originally forecast the project at 6.5, but now construction estimates are coming in at 11.6 million. And so we're asking for an additional 3.9 million to make up some of that difference. Marshall Readiness Center is home of the 1st Battalion, 151st Field Artillery's A Battery, Alpha Battery, and about 120 soldiers drill there. This is a comprehensive rehab of a 64-year-old readiness center. This will enhance the efficiency, improve life safety requirements, and force protection standards that are required by the Army, and would address $1.6 million in deferred maintenance. Next one on our list is the Fergus Falls Readiness Center. Fergus Falls is an interesting one. Even though it's an older facility, it was in a lot better shape. So this is also a 65-year-old facility, but we've been able to push this one back. Originally, $2.2 million were appropriated with a dollar for dollar, with an estimated project cost of $4.9 million. Construction is now estimated to be about 5.9, so it went up by $1 million, a little over $1 million, and we're asking the state for an additional $800,000. Fergus Falls Readiness Center is the home of the headquarters and headquarters company detachment of the 2nd Battalion, 136th Infantry. Their headquarters is in Moorhead, and that's about 100 soldiers drilling in Fergus Falls. Very important facility for us. And then the last project on our list is the new project, which is now estimated to require $20.6 million. You will note that we have a much smaller federal match currently planned. That has to do with the availability of federal funding. It is possible that we will be able to reduce the requirement for state funding if we can get more federal funding, but estimating what we're going to have available on the federal side is very difficult to do. As you're probably all aware, we're 5 months into the current federal fiscal year, and we still don't have a budget for this year. So trying to estimate what we're going to have in the next year or two is difficult at best, and we often don't have the accuracy that we'd like, but we have had pretty good luck trying to forecast and making our case. And we particularly have a huge advantage when we do have state funds available to match on the federal side to convince the feds that they should accelerate the programs that we have going. Rosemont is really the first of our really, really large armories that we're renovating. It's approximately 30 years old. Right now, the 1st Brigade Combat Team is headquartered there. They oversee about 5,000 soldiers in Minnesota. About 450 of those will be drilling in Rosemont. And Mr. Chair, I think that brings me to my conclusion. I'd like to thank the committee for hearing our requests. Also like to thank the committee for their interest in our facilities and the bonding tours in the last couple of years, getting out to see what we have. We pride ourselves on the service that we provide the state and nation. Investing in armories for our soldiers provides a training space to ensure that we have a ready force to meet the challenges of today and tomorrow. And I will stand by for any questions that members may have.
Members, any questions for the director or Major General? Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Kern. These readiness centers are so important to our individual communities. In Rosemont, they have a major economic impact, not only for our individual businesses, because all these gentlemen and ladies go out and get lunch and they interact with the community, but they also have another really good feature that they have is like at the Readiness Center is our sheet of ice. Many of our meetings are held there for the community. And it's so neat to see students interact with a lot of the reservists that are there. It really brings a lot of value to our community, and I'm sure it does to the other ones around the state too. So I highly hope we can support these projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Director Kurd, so did you say that the four projects we're going to get fully of the, I think, $5.9 or so million dollars. We're going to get a full federal match for that.
Oops. Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. So generally, it's a 50-50 split between the federal and the state. However, there are some aspects that the feds pick up 100% of the cost, and there are some aspects of the construction where they won't fund any of it, and so we have to make that up with state dollars. So each individual project comes out pretty close to 50-50, though depending on what we're doing, sometimes there's a little bit more federal money, sometimes there's a little bit more state money. I will note for the record, though, the Rosemont project right now, we're requesting additional state funding because we know we won't have the federal funding available, and we think it's very important to move forward with that project. So at this time, you'll see there's about a one-third, two-thirds on the Rosemont project right now, the way we're calculating it. And we're trying to work with our federal partners to increase the amount of funding that's available for that project. But as I said, we're 5 months into this year, and we don't know what we got yet. So trying to tell us what we're gonna give us next year is really, that's speculative at best.
Thank you, Director Kerr. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Lee. And Mr. Kerr, I appreciate the work you're doing. I wasn't going to mention this, but since Representative Hewitt brought up the importance of these centers to a lot of our communities, I will. Aren't you scheduling for in the future to start closing some of these facilities in Greater Minnesota?
Director Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Riddell, that is indeed part of our plan. We have a number of facilities that we have planned, including the facility in Litchfield. I will tell you that every year our plan seems to move a little bit further into the future, though. So we are staving off some of those closures. But in some places, for example, we're actually constructing a new facility in Laverne. We're doing that with actually no legislatively appropriated funding. That came with a very generous donation from the community, and the Minnesota State Armory Building Commission is making up the rest of that. And so when we do build that new facility in Laverne, we will close the old one. We're also replacing the armory in New Ulm. That's currently a 100% federally funded project. And so that armory will be made available to the community. So we will be divesting there. But there are places where we are literally walking away from some places. For example, we closed out in Northfield a few years ago and sold that facility to a private individual in the community that's moved a couple of businesses in there. So we do see that over the long term, there's simply not enough money to sustain the number of armories that we have and the costs that are going up. So we are reducing our footprint very incrementally. It would not surprise me to see that the scale of that change, but there are also new developments on the federal side. I will tell you that many states are not as generous as Minnesota is toward their National Guard in accommodating their facility maintenance. And many states are in a very difficult position. Many National Guards are in a very difficult position. And so that's putting some pressure on at the federal level to more fully fund armory maintenance and replacement. So we'll continue to track our programs. We do have a very long looking plan and continue to manage our processes to match the demographics of the state and the mission requirements that we assess are out there.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Mr. Kerr. Just I'd like to emphasize, again, the importance of these facilities. I know that you're aware of that, and I hope that you will continue to stave off and reevaluate the closure of some of these in the future. Particularly Litchfield. I could talk about the merits of Litchfield versus Laverne, but I won't do that today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Seeing no other questions, thank you, Director Kerr, and thank you, Major General, for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. Last presentation for today is the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We have Commissioner Hirkey. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, and Ranking Member Erdahl. It's for the record, I'm Larry Hirkey, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And Chair Lee, can you see my slides?
We can. Please proceed.
All right. Thank you very much. Agenda for today, fairly short, just a few minutes here, just where we are at, a review of what has been approved and where we're at with those items from previous years. and then our governor's recommendation for bonding. Currently, as chair members probably know, we're in five different locations for our veterans homes. We have three future homes, which will be a subject of some discussion today. We currently operate three cemeteries in Duluth, Little Falls, and Preston, and we have a future cemetery in Redwood Falls. And we have offices in St. Paul and also at the Whipple Building. Concerning previous appropriations, all $6.3 million in asset preservation provided in the 20 and 21 periods is under and being utilized currently. I went out the other day, saw the Fergus Falls Veterans Greenhouse. It's partially completed. It will be completed in the spring and ready for spring planting, and also the Redwood Cemetery. The $4.5 million that was provided to that to finish that project is currently under construction. Our first interment will be in November. Governor's recommendation, three items for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and the ranking there, the three item of $80 million. This does represent a larger ask than usual for a couple different reasons. One, there's a great need for our project in Hastings. But also besides that, there's a historic amount of money we believe will be available from the VA to provide the matching funds for these projects as we go forward. The first priority is $10.329 million. I won't spend as much time on this since I did get a chance in Bemidji to provide this as more of an update for this, our first and top priority. The three homes are currently under construction. Just a reminder of what they look like. Additional funding was authorized in 2018 at $32 million to provide 72 beds in Bemidji and also Montevideo and 54 beds in Preston for a total of 198 additional beds in Greater Minnesota. On the timeline, just a reminder of funding was provided in 2018 from the state. We had to then apply for the federal funding. We were not selected in 2020. And we received selection a year later than anticipated in 2021. I was asked at the last hearing about value engineered items, which I discussed, so I decided to put a slide in on that. You may get individual requests for amenities that were taken out of the design earlier in order to bring us back within budget. These were the totals of those amenities in the three locations. My request today is not for these value engineered items, but I thought I should make you aware of it in case you were to get other requests. And the dollar amount there is not reflective of current costs. So it would have to be escalated in order to keep up for the COVID issues that Don Kerr talked about with his projects. And just this probably tells the overall situation. Again, state funding at $32 million. We received $79 million from the federal government for the projects. Community actually provided $11 million, which was great help and assistance. And then we did ask for a federal plus-up. It's a one-time plus-up with no match required at 7.9. And my current shortfall is 10.3, which is in line with most of the projects here during the COVID time period. This money will be used for fixtures, furniture, and equipment, and also for owner's contingency going forward. Second request is a new request for the Hastings Home campus. We're requesting $59.66 million. This represents the state portion at 35%. And I'm going to use the picture here since I got it up. We're replacing this whole area in here. The initial facility was actually built in 1901 with several additions after that. Again, as a summary, $59 million from the state. We'd be asking for $111 million or 65% from the federal VA. We would be in a high category here because we're replacing existing beds. This would solve many issues with us. We have six buildings that are currently beyond their useful life of the nine buildings on campus. We have three that are near failure, and one of them actually has residents in it, 25. We have deferred maintenance of $18.6 million. And that's what led me to start looking at options other than just continue to fix things that keep breaking within the facility. Also, I do have some security issues. I also have some safety issues, especially with the kitchen. I'm difficult for me to even get anywhere close to meeting SB 2030 requirements. And just as a conclusion there, the study we had done said that due to numerous deficiencies, to invest in upgrading and renovating these buildings is not a good use of funds. And this was the actual study that we had done. It took us about 6 months and completed in 2021. And we think this consolidation is the best approach going forward. Our third priority is asset preservation. It's for facilities at Minneapolis, Fergus Falls, Silver Bay, and Luverne, with emphasis actually on Minneapolis campus. I still have lots of things that need to be taken care of. That campus, again, is the oldest campus we have in the agency. Here demonstrates the need for funding. And as I said before, the $7.8 million of the $10.3 would be actually focused towards the Minneapolis campus, but there are smaller needs in Luverne, Silver Bay, and Fergus Falls. And Chairlee, that represents my brief. I want to thank you and the members for supporting the veterans of Minnesota in the past. I think we're doing a great job of having a presence in greater Minnesota through your efforts and our efforts to work together. And I just ask consideration of these projects. I think it's timely especially for the Hastings project to move that along now due to the fact of all the deficiencies around the campus itself. With that, I'll stand for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Commissioner Herkey. Regarding some of the add-ons that have been taken off on the three veterans homes under construction, we did have a hearing, Chair Lee, in Chair Eklund's committee for the Preston home itself, and I thought the Preston community did a great job on describing what was needed there. And again, to be clear, the governor's budget proposal and the commissioner are not endorsing that, but I, from what I understand, they're not fighting it. If we put it in there, they would certainly work with us on that. For the record, Mr. Chair, I would also like to thank Commissioner Herkey for the tremendous job that he has done on these three new veterans homes. He was put in kind of a box when a construction cost started going up, but they still made it work. And now we'd like to come in through either bonding or through the general fund budget. We've got two bills in. One is sitting in Chair Eklund's committee. One is in this committee to get the add-ons back on. I think this is very important to do this. And again, Commissioner Herkey, thanks for the great job that you've done on these homes.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Members, any additional questions for the commissioner? Seeing none, thank you so very much, Commissioner Herkey, for coming by this morning. Really appreciate this presentation, and we'll work with you as we move forward along the process. Thank you to all presenters for coming by this morning. Our next meeting, members, is Thursday, February 17th. We will continue with capital budget presentations from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, Department of Public Safety, Water and Soil Resources Board, Agriculture, Department of Education, the State Academies, and the Purpich Center for the Arts. This meeting is adjourned.